WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Michael Puente in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Coming up on the show today, we'll round up the major Chicago news of the day. But first, health coverage for millions of people is on the line. Subsidies for the Affordable Care Act are set to expire at the end of the year, and an extension seems unlikely. Premiums could double and many could be priced out of insurance. This means safety net providers, people, and hospitals who serve folks who are uninsured will be left to meet an ever-growing and urgent need. At the table is Tasa Anuwishki, president and CEO of Loreto Hospital, and Dr. Nagazi Izike, president and CEO of Sinai Chicago and former director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. Congress has less than a month to extend subsidies for the ACA. Dr. Zike started by sharing what's going through her mind.
It's a really tough time. It's really a tough time as we think about these subsidies going away. Like you said, many people will be priced out of insurance. And so that burden will fall primarily on safety net hospitals like ours, because that's where they will come. Let's be clear that even people who have Medicaid, people who are uninsured, they're not welcome and really wanted from, you know, some of the other institutions. That's where the safety net hospitals come in, and that's the area we're happy to serve in. But if you keep pushing the number of uninsured on us, there is a breaking point for the safety net hospitals. And it's that breaking point that is going to disrupt the entire healthcare ecosystem, not just for the communities served by the safety nets, but the entire healthcare ecosystem across the city that depends on us doing what we do so that other systems can do what they do.
Tisa, how do you feel? We're less than a month out on this. Did you ever think we would be here at this point?
Oh, absolutely not. When you're talking about the healthcare disparities that are already prevalent in at-risk and vulnerable communities, to say that we're going to now take away healthcare coverage for those individuals, to Dr. Nzike's point, it's going to put an overburden on an already burdened system. And so it's a very scary time. We hope that the Senate will come up with a resolution to this before the end of the year. But we have to do something. But safety net hospitals like Loreto Hospital, we're going to continue to do the work that we have committed to doing and serving our community.
Dr. Izike, you talked about a breaking point. How close are we to that? And what would that look like?
Yeah, no, seriously, if we really cut the subsidies and all these individuals, I think the governor used a number that maybe 330,000 people could lose coverage. You know, where are those people going to go? They will likely try to find their way to the safety nets. The safety nets are already struggling in today. Before any cuts, the safety nets are already struggling. There's a limit to how much more we can better control costs and be more efficient. So inevitably, there will be, you know, services that will be cut. On the extreme end, there will be hospitals that will close, and that will result in other hospitals having to be overcrowded. People think it takes a long time to get in to see their doctors now. imagine when a few hospitals are not here or closing services, it will just multiply.
Are we talking about hospitals here in the Chicago area, Illinois, or close, like nearby in the Midwest?
Yeah, I mean, the system, this whole process will play out the same in cities throughout. We're not even talking about rural hospitals will face the exact same problem, maybe even multiplied, because there aren't even any hospitals sometimes for 100, 150 miles. So this is going to play out across the country. We obviously will see it here in Chicago, in this densely populated city with a lot of people who this will impact. And it will have a very serious ripple effect.
Tisa, I got to ask you this. As somebody who heads Loretto Hospital, how do you plan for something? Obviously, you have to do some planning, but there still seems to be so many unknowns that's going to be facing your hospital.
Absolutely. I think what we're focusing on really is ensuring our long-term financial sustainability, by creating opportunities that allow us to pay our bills and invest in new services. So we're looking at recruiting top talent and opening programs, again, that bring long-term value to the community. So I know the instinct is to immediately talk about we have to do some service cuts, perhaps layoffs. But again, if we're being, staying true to our mission and addressing the healthcare disparities that already exist in the community, then we cannot talk about subtracting when we should be adding to the equation. And so we're trying to be ahead of the game and trying to figure out how can we bring service lines and provisions, honestly, that attract more commercial payers to the hospital. Because safety net hospitals care for large Medicaid populations, we get reimbursed on average, I would say, 32 to 34 cents on the dollar. And so how do we attract more commercial payers to our institutions to eliminate some of the burden and the wait times of some of the larger institutions? No one should have to wait 3, 6, 9 months just to get a diagnostic test or test just to find out what's going on before we can even begin to start treatment. We've got to look at overall quality of care and improving that for all residents throughout the country in the state of Illinois.
You know, I've been throwing some phrases around, some titles, and some people may not be as familiar with that. So what is a safety net hospital and what makes it different than, say, just a typical hospital?
Sure. Safety net hospitals just care for high Medicaid populations. So the technical definition is you serve a population of 40% or greater Medicaid patient population with 4% charity care or 50% Medicaid population. And so most of us are general acute care hospitals. I think a couple of the safety nets are actual trauma centers, but it just means that you serve a high Medicaid population. There's no other distinction other than that. We serve the same we provide the same services as some of the other larger institutions. We just serve a higher Medicaid population.
What role do safety nets play sort of in the larger landscape of healthcare?
Oh, they're critically important. Again, when you're talking about at-risk vulnerable communities that don't have access to care, the safety nets are the go-to. So we talk about, safety net is critical to providing, again, the access to those residents. And without the safety nets, where do individuals go to get their routine and preventative medical care? In addition to when, needing access to emergency services and not having to travel long distances to get that care when you need it most. So safety nets are the lifeline for our communities. We are the difference between premature death and precious life. Mm-hmm. So we need our safety nets.
So, Dr. Ezekiel, what is your team right now? What are they thinking right now as they plan for what's ahead?
Yeah, so we're bracing for what's coming. We know that some of the a big part of the strategy will be trying to help people stay insured, and so we do have a social services arm for Sinai Chicago, the Sinai Community Institute, that will be helping to navigate people to make sure if they qualify for insurance that we help them get on insurance. I know as they're maybe going to be implementing maybe even work requirements, helping people to understand what's coming so that we can help them stay on their insurance. So really an important part is to try to keep as many people as is possible actually on insurance, see if there are other forms of insurance that people may qualify for that they're not aware of. But then, really identify some of, these are clearly false choices. Like Deisa said, there's no service that our community doesn't need. But when the rubber hits the road and if things really shake out as they are, we're going to have to make some of those false choices between what we can't continue to do just given the new climate that we will be facing.
So in a previous conversation about this issue, we spoke with CEO of Community Health, Stephanie Wilding. Here's what she had to say about the number of uninsured people they serve.
And I think in the state of Illinois, we're already seeing that increase in the uninsured rate.
Yeah.
You know, July 1st, a program called Health Benefits for Immigrant Adults was sunsetted. And that meant 40,000 people in Illinois lost their health insurance, 22,000 in Cook County alone. And to give you a perspective of what that felt like on the ground, in the month of August this year, Community Health saw a 24% increase in new patients registered as compared to August of last year. And August of last year was one of our highest new patient registrations ever.
Well, doctor, are you seeing similar trends at Sinai?
You know, I have noticed that the numbers in the hospital have actually gone down. I think that's related to some of the ICE activity in the area where people have, you know, been literally afraid to come out of their homes for fear of abduction. But even as we've seen that decrease, we've seen a slight uptick in the percentage of self-pay. And so when we think about safety nets and charity care, we know that only 5% of hospitals in the U.S. are designated safety nets, but it's those 5% that provide 28% of all the charity care. So we know that that is what is going to be coming if more and more people lose their insurance. But that is something that we have to be supported, because that is not something that we can actually do alone in terms of increasing those percentages.
Deisa, is your hospital, Loretto Hospital, are they planning that the ACA subsidies will not be extended and this is going to be life as we know it moving forward? Are you planning for that day? And how are you going to respond to that?
Sure. You know, again, I think the instinct is to talk about, well, obviously, we don't want to talk about layoffs or service cuts or even closures of any hospital, any safety net hospital. So we are planning, but we're trying, again, to be very proactive and planning to grow the service lines, because we know that there are still some access issues for some specialty care that is needed in the community. And so how do we partner with some of our FQHCs or some of the other larger institutions so, once again, we can help be a meaningful partner to them and eliminate that burden that we're seeing? We know that the cost of care for emergency department is 10 times the cost more than routine medical care. And so we know that if this does in fact happen, that we will see an influx in our emergency room. So we are planning to put some measures into place to say what kind of staffing support do we need in those areas. But I think we have to focus on adding and not subtracting. And I know that's very counterintuitive. But the life expectancy gap between downtown and the west side is 20 years. And so that's going to grow to 30 years or greater in some of these more vulnerable communities. And so we're going to plan to grow and partner with other organizations and other healthcare providers in our communities to plan for that.
Let me ask you this. All this is centered around, patient care. What are you hearing from your patients? Are they nervous about this? Are they frightened?
Oh, absolutely. Our patients are very concerned. And so we're trying to be a resource to provide information on what's happening and keep individuals updated on what's happening at the federal level. But to Dr. Nzike's point, we're looking at it from what can we do as being a partner with our patients and our residents to address some of the, if it comes to the work requirements, how can we help support them in those efforts? Who do we need to partner with to make sure that the individuals can meet the work requirement, whether it's through volunteering? We're planning to open up a free hospital grocery store, hospital-based grocery store in the spring. And so how do we, attract or allow some of those residents to come and volunteer to meet the work requirements that may come down the pipe?
What are your patients hearing, doctor?
No, our patients are the same.
The same.
And they're saying the same. And so we need to actually look to the city to really step up, because the resources that are needed to protect access to care for the most vulnerable exist in the city. So some of these partnerships that need to grow and blossom are with the corporate community. We need, you know, businesses that, you know, work here in the city. They have a vested interest in having a healthy workforce. You know, we say that health is wealth. And so looking for our partners to say, we need to support this care. We need to ensure that we will be able to maintain services so that all of the hospitals can do what they can do, so that we can promote health and not do things that will threaten health. The safety net is just that. Just like a trapeze artist would need a safety net, the safety net is there to catch people when they fall, to catch the vulnerable. I actually did a TEDx Arlington Heights. Please see that to hear more about safety nets. But we have to make sure that we are there to catch people that fall. And there are many vulnerable people, whether it's a young adult who has fallen off their parents' insurance, or someone that's just in between jobs. There are a lot of people that can fall into this gap where they need the safety net. And so we all have a vested interest in protecting this net for our community.
Well, we know this is on the minds of so many people, not just here in Chicago, but around the country. But we're going to have to leave it there. That's Tesa Anuwinski, President and CEO of Loreto Hospital, and Dr. Ngozi Ezike, President and CEO of Sinai Chicago and a former director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
What a pleasure to be here.
Okay, now a breakdown of today's big headlines. At the table, WBEZ's anchors Lisa Labas and Alex Degman. We started off with something everyone is feeling, the cold. Here's Lisa.
It doesn't bother me. I really prefer this to the 100-degree heat in the summer. So, you know, I'm all for the snow. I'm like pro-snow, pro-cold. You just bundle up, right?
That's what
mittens,
you got to do.
Gloves, hats, well, scarves. You can complain about it, but I won't.
That's what about fair. You, Alex? Well, what do you do to keep warm?
This is my first Chicago winter in more than 20 years. Wow. So I'm relearning how to do this. So I wasn't expecting 0 degrees quite so early.
It was a little early.
It's a little early. And this much snow this early it's a lot for my first one back. But like Lisa said, I'm learning how to wear gloves and earmuffs and sweaters and proper shoes.
Right. If you don't, you're like, okay, I'll grab those next time.
But then there's also, you know, my skin gets really dry up here.
Sure.
So lotions and, you know, things that smell good, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so what do you prefer? The extreme hot end like August or the cold like today?
Heat, 100%. Okay. Heat.
Well, so we'll have to agree to disagree,
fine.
Alex.
So how are you keeping your pets warm? We know we have to take the dogs out. So I don't know if you have cats. How are you doing it?
Well, my cats are indoor cats, so we all look out the window together and say, wow, look at that. It's cold. But I watch all the neighbors, you know, walking their dogs by. And Alex, I know you have a dog. So,
I do, yeah.
You know, that can't be easy on your dog's paws and stuff.
You would think. However, this is, this might be a little cold, but this is what I call Louie weather.
Louie
loves the snow.
When,
like, first snowfall, he jumps, he eats it, he barks unnecessarily. Yeah, he does a whole thing. When he was out for a walk in the neighborhood when it was snowing this past Saturday, it was just, he was in heaven. He
They're
could
like
not get enough.
They're little kids. How cute.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, I don't have to worry about him too much in this cold.
Aw.
That's fantastic. I have a small dog, too. We bundle him up. We don't have the little boots. He doesn't like the boots. So we take him out with a little sweater and all that. So he seems to like it. But like cats, we have some roaming cats in the neighborhood. So I build a little shelter for them. I call them the Cat Hotel, complete with an espresso bar and everything.
That's so great. You really do that?
Yeah, I really do
that.
Yeah. So
I think Louie gets an attitude with dogs that wear clothes, though. It just seems that way. Because I'll see him barking out the window like, hey, that's bougie. Stop that.
Well, Lisa, you know, there's a rumor that warmer temperatures are on the horizon.
Well, that's a rumor, Michael Puente. And I would say the word of the week is marginally. Like it will get a tiny bit warmer. So, you know, we're in the single digits today. Like it was getting colder as I was on the air this morning. And the last time I looked, it was 7 at O'Hare with the wind chill around 6 below. And the National Weather Service told us this morning it might get up to the low 30s later in the week. So, and we're already later in the week, you
All right,
so,
short season
and more snow. So more fun for Louie coming this weekend.
Oh. Hey, he's all for it.
Yeah.
All right, let me prove to you that I'm a serious news journalist now.
Sure.
So, Lisa, Chicago alderpersons are backing an alternate budget proposal that avoids Mayor Brandon Johnson's controversial corporate head tax. So what's in this proposed budget?
Right. Okay. So I feel like this group of alders, spearheaded by Marty Quinn, sponsoring a measure to say the budget. We're talking about the budget. So it's 26 moderate and conservative alders have signed on to this thing. The one that's most notable is Mayor Brandon Johnson's own Finance Committee Chair, Pat Dowell. So here's what they want. I feel like they're only targeting this head tax. That's right. They're trying to avoid this at all costs. But in order to avoid that, they want to double the garbage fee. So it would go from $9.50 a month to $18. If you're a senior citizen, if you're eligible, you would pay just $9 a month. Also, they want to put a 3% extra tax on liquor sales, off-premise liquor sales. So when you go to the liquor store or, you know, packaged goods or whatever, taking stuff away, you would have to pay, or the retailer would have to pay an extra 3%. So the mayor, I don't think he's happy about that, though.
He's not. So let's take a listen to what the Mayor Johnson had to say about this latest proposal at a news conference at City Hall on Tuesday.
The vast majority of the people in this city are struggling every single day just to make the ends meet. And we have alders that are playing games with those families. Give me something I can work with.
That's an emotional response there from Mayor Johnson. Well, Alex, you've covered a lot of budget negotiations at the state level. What do you make of what's happening here up here in Chicago as we inch closer to December 31st, the deadline to strike a deal?
Well, the first thing that I think of is if this were state negotiations, that would be Mayor Johnson at 9 p.m. on December 31st. The state usually puts things off like this until the very last minute. So that's the first thing I notice. And the second thing I notice is that it's been really interesting for me to kind of watch this power struggle play out here, because it's usually been, from what I understand, a mayor down approach. And now the city council is trying to take more control of it. In the states, it's kind of the opposite, because the governor says what he wants, but then the state legislature takes the ball and just like kind of runs with it. As far as emotional outbursts, I wouldn't call that an outburst, but as far as getting really emotional about this this early, it's unusual for that to happen at the state level. But I can see that there are a lot of divisions also forming, kind of like they are on the state lines when you have one political party that's running a body.
Right, right. Now, Lisa, the city council also has advanced a measure to ban all hemp products. So what's the objection here?
All right. This is what I was starting with earlier. So Alder Marty Quinn is sponsoring this measure. He's saying that he says bad actors is his quote. They're selling intoxicating hemp products to kids and to, you know, to people who don't need it. But, you know, hemp is used safely in things. His measure would ban sales everywhere in the city, unless it's at a specific like dispensary, right? So, but the Consumer Protection Department in the city says, well, how are we going to regulate this?
Right?
You know, I mean, there's hemp in so many things, you know, oils and lotions and maybe your duvet cover, right? You know, how do you regulate that? How do you do that?
Good question. Good question. So they haven't figured that out. I guess they're going to keep talking about it. So, moving on a little bit, Alex, our nation celebrates its 250th birthday next year, and planning is underway across the country. And Governor Pritzker says several plans and events are planned for here in the state of Illinois. So how does the state plan to mark the anniversary?
There are a lot of events that are planned between basically now and July 4th of 2026. And they're not just here. There are going to be some events here. We've got we've got events all over the state, ranging from concerts to exhibits to just a lot of individual things that communities are doing. I'm hearing that there are 68 counties out of the 102 in Illinois that have said that they're going to participate, that they're going to engage in their own things. A lot of municipalities have passed resolutions saying we're going to do this. And there are towns like with people smaller than 1,000 that are going to participate in this. So people are taking this really seriously. And Governor Pritzker, when he made this announcement yesterday that this is all happening, he made the point that this is a really important time to reaffirm that, yes, we actually do care where we came from. We affirm the ideals by which this nation was founded. And Illinois is going to be showing that at a time when he says, you know, maybe some of our ideals are not being followed right now. And maybe there are people leading the federal government that aren't about that.
So I was just going to ask you, do you think they're going to put politics aside, given how divided the country is, to at least celebrate the country's birthday?
No.
No.
Well, because
it'll be front center.
He did not put politics aside yesterday. So I think that when you're talking about where America is going and where America has been, I mean, politics, it's inherently a part of it, unfortunately.
Right. It's going to be at least politics adjacent.
Oh, sure,
you know, like it'll be mentioned, you know, that's that I think so.
You know,
I
it's going to be like celebrating a relative's birthday while the family's kind of squabbling about things.
Sure, so sure.
That's life, right?
There you go.
So, Lisa, what other stories are you watching?
Okay, so we learned that there was an investigation from ProPublica and the Invisible Institute, and they took a look at the Chicago Police Department promoting a couple of officers after it was discovered those officers had engaged in sexual misconduct. And the two groups determined that these promotions are part of a decades-long issue within the police department, allowing officers to, you know, move up in the ranks despite problems with their personnel files. So we'll certainly be watching that throughout the day.
That's great. Thank you so much on that. So, Alex, we could spend a minute talking about the Bulls, but we know they lost their fifth game in a row. So I tell you what, let's move on to the Bears. You know, the Bears play the Packers on Sunday. Big, big game. Do you follow the Bears? You don't follow the Bears?
I do. Well, see, it's interesting you mention that because I have long considered myself a fair weather Bears fan because football's not really my go-to sport.
We
however,
all are.
Yeah, but the thing is, I really, there was a point this season where I really didn't want to watch them, but I couldn't help it. I had to. And then my friend that I was with said, well, I mean, I hate to tell you that you're kind of a diehard. Like, really?
Come on, man. Sound like a diehard.
But yeah, no, that's my usual response. But this season has been a lot of fun. I have been following them.
Sure. It's probably the biggest game on Sunday since the double doink back in, 2017
Michael.
Playoff thing. But hey, you know, right now we're going for what, our 10th win in a row. It's against the Packers. Big game. It's going to be probably pretty cold. It's going to be cold here too. Are you feeling excited for the game?
I'm feeling pretty excited for this just because, not necessarily because I know all about the statistics or how or what I expect Caleb's QB rating to be, because I don't really know any of that. But just the vibes around this team are different. And I don't know if that's just because they're winning or if it's just because, you know, they're having fun again. But it just seems like they're in it this year. And I think part of what was holding me back along for a while this season is not just because I'm a Chicago sports fan and, you know, I'm used to disappointment, but I wanted to see how they would do against a really good team, against the Philadelphia Eagles. And
I think they surprised a lot of people.
They surprised the heck out of me. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
All right. So Alex, what other stories are you watching?
So there was an interesting story I came across yesterday in the Tribune about a church up in Evanston that has a nativity scene that depicts, some of the scenes that we've been seeing around the Chicago area with ICE enforcement. You've got portions of the nativity scene with, baby Jesus and zip ties and ICE agents dressed up with gas masks and things like that. So I'm scheduled to talk to them in a few minutes for a story that, you know, hopefully I'm going to be putting together within the next week or so.
Well, we're looking forward to that. That was WBEZ's anchors, morning anchors, Lisa Labas and Alex Degman. Thank you to both of you.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yasin, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.